Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, what do you got there?
This is the new Ping G430 Max 10K driver. It's next level, I'll tell you. It's so impressive. We all know that Ping help you play your best. I've been using them for years. I wouldn't use anything else. In fact, this new driver, it's Ping's straightest and highest moment of impact driver ever.
Holy moly. So on the course, what's that going to mean? How's it going to help golfers?
Well, to put it simply, it means people are going to be hitting longer, straighter, and they're going to absolutely crack their drives off the tee. I could talk about it all day. It's that good. But the best thing to do, if you want to check out how impressive Ping's new G430 Max 10K driver is, just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting, and I'll see you out there with my Ping gear.
So how much of the Masters did you actually watch, Nick? I'm tired.
Yes. Very, I tell you. Masters week, yeah, you always struggle for a few days after because what time do you get up each time?
My body clock, I was getting up at 4 a.m. Yep. anyway. So I'd get up in there and watch the pre, whatever your tournament is before the big commentators come on. I was actually watching a little bit of that. But you know what? I think the wind and the weather made me want to watch more. Yeah, I think if it was just perfect days and the ball was stopping on the greens, I don't think I would have got up for that. I think I would have, maybe just pushed the time six and watched what I wanted to watch. But it was fascinating and fun to see these players play the way they did and get punished the way they did on the windy days. It makes you feel good.
You suck down those coffees because we've got a show to do.
Okay.
All right.
It's week 16 of the golfing year, and we're live from the Australian Golf Centre, home of Golf Australia and the PGA of Australia. And it's been a big weekend with plenty of Masters watching, and to be honest, not a lot of sleeping. And Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen can't wait to have a good old chinwag about it. As always, we're here thanks to the team at Ping. They'll help you play your best. See your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting. And thanks to the Golf Clearance Outlet. They beat everyone's prices. You can say hi in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth or online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. And today, we welcome an exciting new partner on Talk Birdie, Watch My Numbers. It's the most powerful data-based golf app in the world. It's an absolute ripper. And we're going to tell you all about it over the next little while. All right, time to hook into a big show. This is the most listened to Australian golf podcast, Talk Birdie to Me. And before we hear from Nick and Mark, let's just revisit Scottie Scheffler's big win at the Masters yesterday.
His stardom confirmed.
You better believe it. 2 green jackets in 3 years. He hardly missed a shot from the moment he held that eagle putt on 13 in round 3. It was beautiful golf. Nick, good to see you.
You too, Mark. It was certainly a masterclass from Scottie Scheffler, and I've been thinking about my masterclass a bit later on. I'm not going to spoil it just yet, but all to do with him at Augusta. Incredible.
I still watch his golf swing, and more importantly, his footwork. I watch his footwork, and I don't understand it. I watch that shaft and the shaft angles, and I think it looks better when he's hitting fades than it does when he's hitting draws. But even so, we've never seen footwork like it since one amazing player who was world number one for 331 weeks in a row, Greg Norman.
Who was out there,
didn't buy a who did buy a ticket.
He did.
Yeah, anyway.
Secondary market, but anyway.
Yeah. His putting got better and better. And between us, I mean, you picked him to win the tournament. That's, even though it's, he's the favourite, it's a very good thing to do. When you're sure, you're sure, and you are absolutely sure.
And so you didn't think he could win.
Well, don't burn me, because we have a segment called Notable, the notable who can't win.
I'll tell you what, though, your dark horse, or the man who you've been putting money on all along,
Ludvig,
he came really close.
Yeah, I managed to cash out. Thank you to Sportsbet. I managed to cash out at the right time, too. My finger was poised. They must, the cash outs, they must be watching that very closely, because if there was any separation, One, two, back to normal. Then it actually went up and down very quickly.
So when did you actually cash out?
Ludwig had just hit a drive down 15, it was left. And right. I knew he couldn't get to the green. And then Scheffler was hitting his shot in the very next shot they showed. And I watched his follow through. And you know when you know.
On 14.
On 14. Yeah. You know when you know how. He made a beautiful swing and he knew. And as soon as I saw that, I pushed the button and got my money. So I was happy in the end.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I was happy in the end. But what do you think of his putting?
Scheffler?
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at the stats afterwards just to see, okay, you know, how did he manage his game all week? Tee to green obviously was exceptional as always, but not as good as he normally is. That's the scary thing. From the tee, I think he was strokes gained at number one off the tee. Approach, he was 14, and usually he's one or two in that. Around the green is what impressed me the most. He was number one in strokes gained there. Putting, he was 22. In the field of 60 that made the cut. So
he was 41st after three rounds.
Correct. He had 27 putts the final day. You know, hit 12 greens, 10 fairways. So a solid day from tee to green, but his short game when he needed it the most, that was most impressive. And the other thing is how he managed his way around the golf course. The way he started was a little nervy, I guess you could say. He said he hit a good shot into one, but the wind sort of caught it, came up short, got a nice up and down on two. Again, he got a wind gust with his third there, went long. The thing he did well was he missed the greens in the right spots. The only place he didn't want to miss it was long on four, and he did go there. Yeah. So other than that, he managed his game beautifully the way around. But, you know, he becomes only the second man to win multiple majors as world number one. The other guy, obviously, Tiger Woods, did it 11 times.
he won 11 majors when he was world number one.
Yeah, it's frightening. It's his third win in his last four starts, and the other one was a runner-up in Houston.
Yeah.
He actually touched his ball, I think, behind the second green. Did you see that when he went over the back? He put his club down and touched the ball and was calling, you know, for making sure it didn't move, which it didn't. So you could tell he was a little bit on edge there, but when he pumped that drive on three and into that fair in the greenside bunker, got that up and down, I think he was away from there. It was so impressive. And then, you know, we were saying, what was it, four players were tied for the lead when he made bogey on seven. There was four players tied for the lead. He was six under. There was Morikawa, who I thought played really well early on, and then he just faded, unfortunately, as the day went on. Ludwig was solid as a rock.
Oh, mate.
I mean,
how was the driving of Ludwig?
It's so impressive.
And effortless.
But the demeanour is what really impressed me the most. I mean, Scheffler, his composure is something to behold, just the way he manages his game. But Ludwig, even when he hit that shot left on 11 into the water, you know you can't go there. Walking up the hill to 12, he had a smile on his face. Mm. People were standing, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy, there's something special about him. And then he made a couple of bounce back birdies, and all of a sudden he's in it again.
Now, I know you'd love this about Ludwig because I've been watching him for a long time now, and it's my favourite part of what he does. Forget his swing, forget the way he putts. Before the ball, he is the best I've seen. Nothing changes. His pre-shot, the way he only takes one look, he might do one little thing over the ball as far as maybe a technical thing, which is it looked like he was just trying to get his hands to move up a little bit. But there's no second guessing. He's made his decision well and truly before he's over the ball, well and truly before he starts making any practice swings. And his pre-shot is so athletic, is the term they use these days. I would have called it so automatic is what I would have the term I would have used. His pre-shot routine is automatic, and he just seems to be in the best state of mind of almost everybody that I've seen in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I'd call it clockwork is the best way to describe it. If you put a stopwatch on him from when he takes his first step into the ball to when he actually hits it, and I talk about this a lot with, for instance, Rory and how many looks he takes over the ball. Other players as well, the way they walk into the ball, you'll find they're very, very similar to Ludwig, but Ludwig is the best at it. Where if you put a stopwatch, I don't know what the time would be, I'm thinking 6 or 7 seconds from when he steps in and actually hits the ball, it will be the exact same every single time. And the other guy who was the best at that I've ever seen, Tiger Woods.
There's a good. The thing I noticed, and it was when he was hitting fades. So when he wanted a fade, whether it was on a pitch or a driver or a 5-iron, he just used the hands, you know, like a bit like you did. He doesn't do the shoulder tilt but it's like he's taking the club outside a bit or something.
Yep.
And he does that only for fades. Otherwise, his swing is just automatic, then it's pretty straight or a draw. Mm. Just being able to turn the ball both ways, how important these days be able to get the sand iron in your hands at like holes like number 9, 14 as well. There's just to see the players who could, with driver, turn the ball around the corners, 13 as well. So there's three really important holes, 9, 13, and what's the other one? 14. 9, yep. 13 and 14. To be able to just stand there with the driver and get the right forearm to go over the left forearm through impact and to see it turn, it's such a big advantage.
Well, the advantage Scheffler and Ludwig have over the other players is they can do it with driver. Yeah. Now, if you watched Homer and Morikawa, whenever they wanted to hit a draw, they had to pull three wood, like on 10, for example.
Yep.
Morikawa hit a beautiful draw. But on 9, with driver where you need to, he couldn't draw it around the corner. He faded into the trees, made the six. Now, Homer, on 13, you got to hit a draw off that tee, but he hit 3 wood there every day. He had a beautiful slingy draw on 10 every day, and it got all the way down because you can get some run. Yep. But I don't even think he went for the green in 2 over the 4 days, Homer, which surprised me so much on 13.
Yeah.
And Morikawa on 13, he had to shave the left edge of the trees to try and keep it in that fairway with his driver because he couldn't turn it. He knew he needed to get home in 2.
Now, in saying that, how much better watching did the two par fives play? 13 and 15.
Yeah.
Instead of having these, you know, wedges and 9-irons and 8-irons into the green, you've got to torch two of the best shots you've ever seen now to actually get it around the corner on 13 and then get, you know, a 4-iron or a 5-iron. I think that the shortest iron I heard into the hole was, might have been a 7-iron, and that was from Bryson DeChambeau yesterday. But his 7-iron, I don't know whether you've seen it. His 7-iron's not a 7-iron. It's got like 4-iron loft.
Yeah, well, all these irons are the same length. I think his 7-iron is probably the one that actually is the right length, and then everything else matches to that. He really struggles with the short irons, obviously, Bryson.
While we're talking about Bryson DeChambeau, Dan, could you please Google DeChambeau iron specs?
Yeah.
We've got to talk about his irons as well, because with woods and hybrids, they have this thing. It's not a straight face. They are actually curved.
Bulge.
And it's called bulge. That's right. It's called and with the old wooden clubs, they used to have roll as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a complete, you know, round. It's completely, you know, it's not a square face at all with woods and drivers. And he had been experimenting with the same thing on the irons.
Yeah. Well, his irons were not conforming last week, apparently.
Yeah.
He'd been tweaking around with them all weekend and managed to get them conforming Monday of the Masters.
Yeah.
So put them in the bag.
Thank you, Dan. Listen to this. We're talking about his just lofts of his irons. So a 4-iron is 16 degrees. For scope, folks, a 1-iron, the standard used to be 17 degrees. His 4-iron's got 16 degrees.
Wow.
His 5-iron's got 19.5 degrees. His 6-iron, 21. His 7-iron has got 25 degrees. Now, my 4-iron's got 23 degrees. So
you're saying they're a little strong.
So the 7-iron being hit into – so even for Bryson, even though he's hitting the 7-iron into the 13th hole, it's actually everyone else's 5-iron, 4-iron sort of thing.
So the problem for Bryson at Augusta, okay, number one, he basically looks like he's trying to strangle a snake when he's putting. I mean, it just looks horrific. You can see all the muscles bulging out of his arms. So putting for him is his biggest issue at Augusta. Number two, one of the reasons it's a big issue is he's not allowed a green reading book because Augusta don't let players have that specifically for the golf course. Now, he's very much a scientist. So what that really means is that you have to rely on instinct, skill, and a bit of creativity. His game is not built around that, so he's always going to struggle on those greens. You'll see the artist do really well at Augusta, not the scientist. So that's a big factor in his game.
Now, I'm glad you said that because, you know, just being over those putts and being able to, you know, sometimes you'll get over it and your read goes out the window once you're over the ball, and being able to change is important.
He was missing 10-footers by a cup and a half. I mean, it was complete misreads.
Yeah.
It was. He hit them where he wanted to, but he just could not read those greens. Now, you spoke about Scheffler earlier about his putting and how it looks. It's still, the weird thing is, it still doesn't look as though it's there yet.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I think there was something on one of the morning shows before the Masters. You know how they do live at the Masters afterwards? Well, they do a pregame one as well. And I think Brad Faxon was on there talking to Jack Nicklaus. And Jack Nicklaus said to him, you got to get open with your stance. and then feel as though your right arm, right shoulder's going under.
Mm.
Now, with Scotty, his stance, if anything, is a little closed. Correct. And then his shoulders are open. So if he actually opened his stance, squared his shoulders up a little more, we could be talking Grand Slam.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the next part about it. I believe his odds right now are 80 to 1 for the Grand Slam this year.
Yeah.
I might get on that.
Well, you know, remember when Brooks Koepka in full swing won, had these nightmares about Scotty?
Yeah.
All he could think about was Scotty and Scotty Scheffler's putting. Now, I'm with you. If Scotty Scheffler's putting comes back to those days,
I mean, he's already
80
good.
80 to 1's looking pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, if he gets his putting, imagine if he opened his stance up. Oof. And something, you know, mm-hmm. opens the stance up with the mallet, and all of a sudden he starts feeling it again. Because, you know, I always think the thing that I look at players' eye lines when they putt. Quite often when he sets up, his left ear is lower.
Yes.
You see that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't understand that. So that means his eye line is sideways.
Yeah. I think it becomes from the closed stance. If he opens his stance up, all of a sudden you're going to sort of up a little bit better and have your right shoulder a little lower than your left. Now, he's been working with guy called Phil Kenyon, who's one of the best short game coaches in the world. His coach is Randy Smith, who I think he's been taught from the age of 7.
Randy Smith gave me a lesson once.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I was there. When I was at college over there, I stayed with the family. You know, everyone felt sorry for me because I didn't have any family when the holidays came. So I'd always get invited to somebody's house. And Royal Oaks was where Randy Smith used to work. And I went there and, you know, was introduced. And Randy said, come on, let's go down and see you hit a few balls. And he was interesting. He said some things to me. I can't remember what they were. But he said a few things to me that I'd never heard before and kind of tried to get into my game a little bit.
Yeah.
So I thought he was great and a friendly person, but I heard Scotty Scheffler say afterwards, and I agree with this, when Scheffler went to Randy and said, maybe we should get a putting coach, yeah. Randy was, yeah, let's do that.
He was open to it.
Yeah, no, no.
A lot of coaches have bigger egos to say nope.
Yeah, that's right. What are you talking about? A lot of coaches would have been hurt.
Yeah. Exactly.
But not Randy Smith. So it shows you the people they have around you are very, very important.
Mm. Jason Day's clothing, I think we need to talk about that.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
No doubt he went
back to the baggy pants again. Did you see that?
Well, I don't mind the baggy pants is for playing in if the wind's not blowing more than 3 clubs. But when the wind is more than 3 or 4 clubs, he can't wear those pants ever again.
Yeah.
Imagine if he turned up to a British Open in those things.
Mm. And the men at the Masters asked him to take off the vest, I think, on day 2. You saw that, where they had all the writing on all the numbers and everything. They've gone, please take that off.
Yeah, good.
So you have to abide by that. And then I think in the final round I saw a picture. Was it you who sent me something about him wearing a hazmat suit or something?
Yeah. It looked like he was, you know what he looked like? He looked like Carl Spengler from Caddyshack when he was cleaning out the pool. He looked like that. That's what he looked like.
There was a very funny tweet about that hazmat suit from this bloke on Twitter called Zitty Dogs, and he said, Jason Day is in a hazmat suit. I can't tell if he's prepping for another pandemic or he's about to cook meth.
See if you get a picture. So there's Jason Day in the hazmat suit. See if you get a picture of Carl Spengler, or I think that's his name, from Caddyshack when he's cleaning the pool. See if you can get that picture and put them side by side. Because you'll be a Twitter sensation overnight.
And the other thing, did you see Zach Johnson, third round?
Now,
where
he told the spectators to go forth and multiply without a doubt.
In no uncertain terms.
No, without a doubt. Without a doubt, he said it. And then watching him try to retract it. how bad is it when so often the cover-up is so much worse than the lie? And Zach Johnson fell into that big time.
No,
have you got it? Yeah.
Oh, you've got the Spagler.
Look at
He just needs the goggles.
Oh, can you put that up? Can you get them side by side, please?
Got to do that.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Get them side by side. Tiger Woods, he came last. I don't care. He came tied 60th, but he got around 4 rounds.
Incredible effort.
It's a mighty effort.
Yeah.
It's 24 straight cuts, so well done. He's played the tournament 26 times, so I think he missed the cut the first couple of times he played as an amateur. Mm. There was a brilliant tweet on social media from Augusta, and this was his 100th round at Augusta, and they showed a clip of him playing in every round at Augusta. You got to see it. We'll tweet it out as well.
All right.
It is superb. So I think he's played in 26 Masters, and you get a look at him every round he's played. Mm. And, you know, it mightn't be the best shot that he played that week, but or that day, but it's still just fantastic to watch how his swing has evolved. You know, there's so many different Tiger swings. There's the amateur swing. There's the swing that won his first green jacket by about 12 shots or whatever it was.
That 99, 2000, 2001 era. Oh, my goodness. How good is that golf swing?
When he won the Tiger Slam.
Might even be better than Ludwig's.
Well, yes, it was. I think it was. I think Tiger's swing looked more like Ludwig's swing in that period. Mm. Slightly across the line, no extra movement.
A little wider,
yeah. That didn't look like he was putting any stress on his body to me back in those days.
It's hard to watch him play at the moment. It's really upper body, obviously, you know, because his lower body's basically done.
Yeah.
So he's putting a lot of stress on his lower back, I would imagine. Yeah. Just to see him walk and get around, you think, this guy's in so much pain just playing golf. And he did. I mean, Augusta National is the toughest walk in golf to get up and down those slopes, to hit shots off so many hanging lies. I mean, we mentioned earlier some, you know, what do you need around Augusta? The iron shots, you've got to hit, I don't know how many shots with the ball above your feet, but it's got to be a good 8 or 9 iron shots with the ball above your feet, and you've got to hit a cut to try and hold it up.
Yeah.
So that's a shot you have to practice forever. All the youngsters out there who want to dream of playing Augusta, practice with the ball above your feet and trying to hit a cut.
Yeah. Let's talk about that, because in the final round, I saw two of the best shots to 13 when they really were important. So Ludwig did the right thing on 12 after making the double bogey on 11 and just went to the left-hand side of the green. Two-putter, did well.
Gee, Homer was unlucky there.
Unlucky.
Very unlucky.
Really unlucky. But then Ludwig, that two shots that he hit onto the 13th were brilliant. Oh. And then Scheffler, you know, just to have the stones to actually turn the driver in that situation around the corner. And then there was just no option. I heard his caddy talking about it afterwards.
I did too, yeah, Ted Scott.
Ted Scott, who's won 4 Masters now. He won 2 with Bubba Watson, and he's won 2 now with Scheffler as well.
If Scotty wants to catch him, he's going to have to sack him, because if he keeps him on the bag, he'll never catch him to match him for the Masters wins.
So I saw him. He just said, well, listen, this is what we do. This is what you're good at. You're the best ball striker in the world. They got the 4-iron out, and they hit that's tiny little target with the ball, you know, almost a foot above his feet.
And I can tell you that shot is no joke. It is so hard. But
harder for you, I reckon.
It's harder for me being a left-hander, I will admit that. But even then, for a right-hander, that trying to hit a cut off a hanging lie like that with the ball is so far above your feet. When you can see how much above it, your feet it is on the TV, that means it's double what it basically normally is, because the TV doesn't give you that justice of what the lie is actually like. And for him to hit a 3-iron or a 4-iron, whatever
4-iron
it
was,
to hold it up like he did, put it in the exact spot he needed to, and what a great 2-putt. And he almost went, tournament's kind of over.
Yeah. You were talking about Tiger Woods talking. I heard him about his body and upper body. I heard him talking after his round today. He said something about the Bahamas. He said he was very happy with the direction that the talks were going there. Nothing's going to happen anytime soon, but the direction and, I guess, the spirit of those meetings in the Bahamas were very, very good. He said he wants to get bigger and stronger in the upper body. Now, look, I don't know your situation, Tiger, but I'm begging you, don't get any bigger.
No, he's big enough.
Getting bigger is not going to help you. I would imagine.
He should have learned that.
He's powerful, powerful unit. 6'2". So what's that?
I don't think he's that tall, is he?
No, 6'1". He's as tall as you, isn't he? What are you? 6'1"? You're the same?
I'm 6.
You're the same. So he would have just been a bit taller
than
you.
Maybe a touch fraction. Taller.
Yeah. So 6'1". So let's say he's 188. I reckon he's looking like he's over 100 kilos to me.
He's big, but it's all muscle.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yep. But even so, I mean, you're trying to get around. You want to win more majors. I just think you'd take, you know, jettison 6 or 7 kilos. Just get rid of it. There's no need. I don't think the big biceps is what is keeping his clubhead speed. I don't think he's got anything to do. This is just me looking on. But I saw him. When did I see him? I must have seen him at the Masters a few Masters ago, 2018 or 2019 was the last time I was there. It looked out of whack. It's not right.
It was almost a bigger version of Greg Norman in his day.
Yeah.
Like, he, from waist down, Norman is so slim. But yeah, from the upper body, it's really wide, obviously, and like a V, pretty much.
Yeah. It was like a cartoon character.
A little bit that way.
It was like a caricature of who he actually is. I hope he doesn't get bigger and stronger. There is just no need for that whatsoever.
Right.
What about our Aussies? 5 finished in the top 30. Not bad, although...
Very good.
Back in your day, apparently 8 finished in the top 30s.
Well, you guys asked me through our texts, have we ever had 5 in the top 30? I said, well, yeah, in 2006, there was actually 7 of us in the top 30. So, but, yeah, there were some pretty good players back in our day, by the way. So.
Yeah, there was, but still, I didn't think of any of our guys were really in form. So
this week or back then?
Well, leading into the tournament, I didn't think that anyone was really jumping out of their shoes and saying, I'm here.
Well, Cam Smith, I mean, the way he started, it looked as though, hang on, he could make another run of this with that eagle on 2. He held a bunker shot.
Yeah.
Very impressed. But his weekend was very bizarre. I think he only made 1 birdie over the weekend in the eagle and a couple of bogeys. So
yeah, it was
a very, very strange weekend for him. But, I mean, he played obviously really well. But the thing I heard was that his putter wasn't working that well,
okay,
which is so unusual for him. But he finished tied for 6th.
Yeah.
So he was the best of our Aussies.
Davis had a good look at being in the lead, or close to the lead.
He was up there for a long, long time. The good news for him, his weekend wasn't great. He had scores of 69, 72, 73, 75. So, but he had a double bogey on 17 on the final round. Good news for him was he finished tied for 12th. Now, top 12 get in next year. So he's already guaranteed next year, which is awesome. So he doesn't have to worry about top 50 in the world.
That is great. Min Woo
was tied for 22nd along with Adam Scott. Still a heck of an effort for Min Woo. I mean, he shot 69, final round, had an eagle, so he gets a bit of crystal, which is always nice. If you make it eagle at Augusta, you get a nice bit of crystal. Scotty did the same, had an eagle on his final round for a 72. Jason Day in his hazmat suit had an interesting weekend, 76-69, final round, 4 birdies, 1 bogey. And then the other Australasian, we've got to mention him, obviously,
Of course.
New Zealander, Ryan Fox. I mean, he started off great, 69, and it was kind of downhill after that for him, finishing in a tie for 38.
I turned my telly on Friday morning, and he was leading the thing. So, you know, he's had a terrific experience this week, even though he didn't go ahead and kill it.
Tommy Fleetwood finished in a tied for third, but I read something interesting. It was quite funny.
Yeah.
He was tied for third with Colin Morikawa and who was it? Homer.
Yeah,
but he had a local caddy on his bag because... his normal caddy, Mick, can't remember what his last name, Fina or someone like that anyway. Yeah. It wasn't on the bag. He's back in the UK. Some health issues. But he had a local guy
smart,
called Gray Moore, who used to be the caddy master at Augusta National.
Right.
And I think his caddy made $100,000, given their finish.
Wow.
So not bad, right?
Absolutely brilliant.
Might be more than the tips he gets for caddying at Augusta. I don't know. So.
Absolutely brilliant.
I was going to say one last thing. Live at the Masters was great. Loved all that, obviously.
Fantastic.
We need to do that here in Australia too. Like
there
the
we
Aussie
do.
Open PGA live at would be
just,
fantastic.
Just an hour's
it?
Worth. Yeah, just an hour
exactly.
worth after each round.
But Paul McGinley, I don't know if you heard him one of the days, because they were chatting about, obviously, everything that's going on in world golf with the PGA Tour, live and all that.
I heard him say
Australian
after 3 rounds.
Open, winner of the Australian Open should get into all 4 majors.
Joaquin Niemann got into the Masters on the back of that win.
Yeah, it wasn't because of the win, but
it's a part of it.
It was one of the reasons. Now the tours, all the majors around the world, should put that in their criteria. I think. I mean, the important national opens are the Australian Open, the South African Open, Scottish Open. You could name a few others, maybe Japan, Argentinian. Who knows what you want to call it? You know, the French Open, for instance, was a huge event. Spanish
huge.
Open, German Open.
Yeah,
all those great ones. There should be some sort of a category there for those to actually maybe get in. And I heard on, I don't know whether it was a podcast or on the radio from Brandel Champier, he actually thought the Australian Open should be the 5th major.
Yeah.
That's a big call.
The Australian Open.
It is to us.
The Australian Open got mentioned an awful lot this week.
Yeah.
And a huge amount, which is so encouraging because we all think it's big. You know, it's nice to hear that people overseas think it's quite big as well. And, you know, they make some of their decisions based on what happens here, which is absolutely fabulous. I can tell you I've had contact with somebody in the know, and everything we've been saying about LIV and the PGA Tour is pretty much on the money.
The source.
The source. Okay. Yeah. Now, well, this source too now. Source two, and I can't tell you this one is.
You have two sources.
Yeah, I've got two.
Gosh.
Yep, I've got two.
Right.
So everything we've been talking about is 100%.
Okay.
So we're hearing that it won't be a long Grand Prix circuit of golf. It may well be a shorter one. But the good news is that the Australian Open is right in. Mm. I mean, even in the shorter one, we are earmarked for something special. If it all goes well, the way talks are just shaping at the moment. I can also tell you this. If the Australian Open is at Kingston Heath this year, and that's not final, but if it is, Rory McIlroy has a great interest in coming to play.
I heard that.
Yep. Yep. So I can tell you that as well. And if I didn't get permission to say those things, I apologise. I'm just looking at my clock. I needed another 30 seconds or something to say before we get to the break. So I apologise. But that is, don't cut that out, Dan, unless I call you a little bit later. Unless I call you a little bit later. Don't cut that out. All right. What are you going to have for lunch here?
Not the pimento cheese sandwich, apparently.
That's a disgrace.
A little chicken wrap would be good.
Yes. Before we go to the break and have that chicken wrap, we have to welcome a brand new partner on Talk Birdie.
Watch My Numbers, the greatest golf app to improve your game you will ever see.
You know lots about it too, because you've been playing around with this thing for a while now.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of doing a lot of the shots and see if you, when you get the app.
You're doing some videos.
Yeah, I'm doing some videos in there as well. But if you want US style stats and US style stats to your level of golf to try and make way to improve, then this is the app for you. You can fill it in while you play. You can fill it in after your round. There are so many features on this particular app. We're going to have to get the boss in, Frank. We're going to have to get him in and do a little bit of a bonus pod, because this will change. I mean, if you're that way inclined and you want the data, well, this, you're not going to find anything better. It's just as simple as that. And a big welcome to Watch My Numbers.
Great to have him on board.
I'll see you on the 10th tee.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in, because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips, because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know, that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Hey, Nick, I know you've heard of the Watch My Numbers app. It is brand new, and it is going to dominate the golf app scene for a long, long time. If you want to improve your game, you need to know the areas you're doing well in and where you need to improve. And this app will tell you exactly that, Nick.
Yeah, you're spot on, Mark. It's the most powerful database golf app in the world, and it helps analyze and improve your game like never before, because it uses real-time data from your rounds and highlights the areas of your game that you want to look at.
You get actionable and usable info in minutes, not hours. That's really important. It's easy to use. You can set up your profile very quickly. I've done mine. And start accessing data and subscriber-only content straight away.
Hmm. Who's it aimed at?
Well, it's aimed at people who want to improve their game. It's for all levels of every golfer out there. Particularly powerful if you're a mid to low handicapper, but it's great for the elite level and pros as well.
So elite and pros as well, I like that.
Watch My Numbers, download it from the App Store and turn your bogeys in the birdies.
Thanks for listening to Talk Birdie to me. And if you're up for it, we'd love you to subscribe, rate and share the podcast wherever you listen. And thanks to our great partners who make the show possible, Ping, they'll help you play your best. Watch My Numbers, the most powerful database golf app in the world. And the Golf Clearance Outlet, they beat everyone's prices. Now, back to Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen.
You set to go?
Yep, ready for the little low right to lefter on 10. For me, it's driver.
I'm hitting three wood.
Okay.
Big slinging hook.
Struggle to turn the driver over, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I do.
Good club for you.
The three wood, no worries, I can turn it. The driver, I can't.
Okay.
Top five. And in honour of Scottie Scheffler, This is the top five unusual flushes in the history of golf.
I love it.
So unusual, when I say unusual swings, but they were flushes and they did good stuff in the world of golf.
Okay.
So that's the criteria. They had to do good stuff.
So they're the golf version of Steve Smith with his his technique.
Yeah,
good comparison.
Yeah. Very, very good. Yep. Absolutely perfect.
Okay.
Actually, I've got someone in at number five, and I just don't want to do it.
I don't want to do it. But why don't you want to do it?
Because I don't like him.
Oh, it's got to hurt. Oh. It's going to hurt, that one.
Wow. Don't like him. That narrows it down to a few people.
It narrows it down to...
Okay, so Colin Montgomery is out. He's out. And in his place at number five is Hubert Green. Now, Hubert Green had one of the most unusual golf swings, puttings, chipping, the whole lot, and he won two majors.
But did he win seven European Tour titles in a row?
No, but he was a good bloke.
Moneyless.
He was a good bloke.
This hatred of Monty is really quite...
He didn't treat me very nicely.
Yeah.
So that's what he gets, eternal grief from me. He
gets knocked out.
At number four, at one point in his career, he was the all-time money earner king on the US Tour. Now, that's saying something.
Mm.
He beat Stephen Leaney in a US Open. Stephen Leaney came second. Jim Furyk came first. Jim Furyk has made the list.
Yeah, he was outstanding ball striker. I played with him a lot, and it was hard to actually watch the golf swing because there were so many moving things going on. But you just see the ball take off every single time. It was down the line.
Precision player. At number three, I saw him once, and it was worth the trip. It was worth waiting around. I was playing the Canadian Tour, and Mo Norman turned up and did a demonstration. Ben Hogan said that Mo Norman was the best ball hitter that he had ever seen. Ben Hogan said that.
Wow. Well, I know Tiger said, there's only a couple of people that have owned their golf swings, and he said Ben Hogan and Mo Norman.
Mo Norman said the most important part of the swing is the first foot in the takeaway. So you know what he did? He said, well, I'm going to start from a foot behind the ball. So his club was a foot behind the ball because that way he perfected his backswing.
Incredible.
He had really high hands, big fat grips, the first time we'd ever seen that. A little short golf swing, but he, on all reports, was a flusher, and he didn't miss a shot that day in British Columbia, I promise you. That driving range was just amazing to watch. At number two, he was one of my favourites. I loved him from the start, Lee Trevino. We're talking about Scottie Scheffler keeping the club face square through impact. I think somebody on social media might have mentioned Lee Trevino to you when you put Scottie Scheffler does at the top. So Lee Trevino, I don't know how many majors he won. Won about seven majors, didn't he, Lee? We'll look that up.
We'll have to look it up.
Won about seven majors. Never won the Masters, but won the rest. And at number one, Scottie Scheffler. What he's doing from tee to green is off the charts. To hit it that far and to have the club face stay that square through impact for that long.
Incredible.
I just think, the back foot slide, the back foot. Mm. Forget the left one going up. The back foot going back like Greg Norman's did, that must help keep the club square and somehow do what he does. Mm. I don't understand it otherwise.
You sent me, I think, something that Jonathan Yarwood posted on Twitter.
Yeah,
I think
it was great.
And he gives a great explanation of how he does it. He says, you would not want to teach this because it's so hard to replicate. It's homegrown, Don't even try and attempt it. But I wonder how many kids or young golfers are attempting that back foot slide this week.
Stacks. 100%.
Stacks. Stacks are doing it right now. Hey, Jonathan Yarwood, he'd be a good one for the pod
for a
bonus.
Yeah.
Good at guy, some Jimmy. Stage. Yes, he is a good bloke.
Yep.
He's a ripper.
Voicemail message went off before.
Okay. Weird. Is that what it was? I thought you just left your phone on.
Oh.
As usual.
Come on.
You have one new voicemail. New message.
Hey, Marco, Nick, Dan, it's Roscoe here from North Mackay. You were talking last week about the Oz Open, a bit low on sponsorship. I don't know. I don't know too much about tournaments and how they run and how they make a profit. But with all these golfers that we've made rich, or at least given a decent leg up to start their career, is it ridiculous to ask them for a few to have a big tournament here? Smithy getting, I think he got 150 mil. Could we ask him for a few mil and Leash for a couple and Scotty for a few here and maybe even Greg, or surely we could get 10 to 15 or maybe even a bit more to make a decent tournament. Might be silly. Might be the best thing ever. Love the pod, boys. Good golfing.
Well, why stop at those players? Nick O'Hearn, he'd get a throw in 500,000 at least. What do you think, Nick?
Oh. Well,
you're better placed than me to talk about this.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
That's all I can say. I like the idea, but good luck. It's that'll be a tough one.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Mm. Fingers crossed. The smaller version to start with of the World Grand Prix circuit kicks away, and that comes sooner rather than later. Yeah, that would be a huge deal down here.
Who was that again, sorry?
That was Ross from North Mackay.
North Mackay, up in Queensland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played part of the Tropo Tour back in my day.
Did
played you? The Mackay Cricketers Club.
What was that like?
Yeah, it's around a cricket oval and everything. Yeah. It was a lot of par threes, I from memory, but it was fantastic. Loved it. It was so unique and unusual.
I wonder if it's still there. How long? Oh, that must have been a long time ago.
That was 96, I think, 95, 96.
Because you were a prolific winner of Pro-Ams, weren't you? What was your percentage?
Oh, I don't know. I won a few.
You would have won 30% of the ones you ended, wouldn't you?
I either finished last or first.
Did you?
I had periods where I played great and periods where I couldn't break 80. So, yeah.
Actually, did you see, just with talking about percentages and wins, before what's his caddy's name? Ted Scott?
Ted Scott, yeah.
Before Ted Scott jumped on Scotty Scheffler's golf bag, he had no wins. Since, he's had 19%.
Mm.
19%.
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
That's one in five.
Although I think he copped a bit of flack from Morikawa's, not a bit of flack, congratulations, I think, on the fifth hole, because finally he gave Scotty the right club because they hit a green. The first four holes, he couldn't do it.
Did you see how Scotty Scheffler invited Ted Scott to walk up before him? I thought that was lovely.
It was class.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a player take the pin as well. I've seen them take the flag.
I was wondering about that as well.
And you know they frame it and it's beautiful and there's always a nice message signed. You know, Scotty Scheffler would have said something beautiful to him. You know, thank God he started clubbing me right after the fifth hole. Or you know, it would have been something like that. But he took the whole pin. He took the whole lot.
Yeah.
Never seen before.
Mm. I'm feeling some Timmy Trumpet coming on.
Here we go.
Yes, this week's Ping Global results, and what a week it was in golf. There weren't many tournaments going on.
Were there other tournaments going on, were there?
There are a couple of others, but the Masters obviously took the cake, and as we know, we've sort of run through them all. But Scotty Scheffler, four-shot win from your Texas Tech alumni. Ludwig.
I paved the way for that kid.
Of course you did. Ludwig Elberg, and then tied third was Morikawa, Fleetwood, and Homer. Best of the Aussies, Cam Smith, and we ran through the other Aussies earlier. Locally, though, on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia, we had the qualifying school going on where Nathan Barbieri, what a finish, six under in his last five holes to run down someone that you helped with his game, Max Charles, and he defeated him and Denzel Irimia in a three-hole playoff, I think it was.
Yeah. Can I tell you this about Max?
Please.
So Max got back from overseas. It's actually a Masters kind of correlation with Max. So I was trying to get him into Texas Tech.
Yeah.
There was one issue. Greg Sands, the coach, had his eye on this kid from Sweden. So Ludwig Åberg kept Max out of I think they made the right – Greg, if you're listening.
Possibly.
You made the right decision. But Max went to a junior college just down the road from Texas Tech, and he played his way into Boise State, did it all off his back, got recruited to Boise State, really? Came back here, got a few starts, missed all the cuts. But listen to this. He had to go to the first stage of tour school.
Yeah.
With nine holes to play, he was outside the line.
Really?
He was gone. Gone for all money. And then he shot one under on the back and snuck in. So he sneaks in to get to the last stage, right? So everything's equal again.
Yeah, this is at Moonah Links.
This is at Moonah Links. In between, he plays pennant for Kingston Heath. He was 9-under through 13 holes and beat Michael Choi, who we see every once in a while. He beat Michael Choi like 6-5 or, 7-6 or something.
Jeez.
That sparked him. He shoots 66 at the old home of the Australians. It's a brutal course, Moonah Links, championship course. He shoots 66, 71 in a hurricane, 66. He's leading by 4 or 5. He shoots 69 with a big lead and gets chased down by a couple of New Zealanders. It was just remarkable. Anyway, well done to Maxi, if you're listening. And well done to the New Zealand buggers as well.
No, that was at Urimia. Now, Barbieri, he's a New South Welshman. So he ended up shooting 64. Yeah, 16 under was the tied for the lead, well, three-way playoff. So congratulations. But there was 36 players in all that got their cards, and we'll look forward to seeing them on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia
this coming season.
Locally was the Sand Greens World Championship.
Yeah, I saw this.
WPGA.
Yeah, I saw the highlights of it.
At the Walcher Golf Club.
Who won?
Welsh woman Lydia Hall.
She came all the way from Wales to putt on sand and won.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Unreal.
Yeah. There was another girl actually who was playing, Hannah Gregg, who we're going to get on the pod in the next couple of weeks, an American golfer.
Girl,
a really nice girl, does a lot of good things on social media, but her travels around everywhere, and she recently got engaged actually here in Australia from a boyfriend. So
she got an Australian boyfriend.
Swedish, actually.
Oh, okay.
A lot of these Swedes in golf at the moment.
They're going well, are they?
Yeah, but Lydia won from a shot by Cholchiva Wongris, and tied third was Danny Vasquez Boyd and Jess Whitting and Wang Young Kay, who's also from New Zealand as well. So
well done for having the guts to put a championship on sand. I mean, it's a very Australian thing. I don't think you see it in too many other countries where you play sand greens, but to actually, for these girls to turn up and play, I salute you. Yep. Well done. Well, I think it's great.
It's not often that I blow my own horn, but since we're in the trumpet part of the show.
We're in the business,
I was a master on the old sand greens. I used to play a lot of pro-ams. I remember winning the Port Hedland Open one year, shooting 62, 66 or something like that.
Is there any break on them ever?
So it's all in the raking. You know, you got to rake them perfectly. And there's a little, it could be, you say, a little bit tricky. You got to lighten the rake just as you come to the hole, you know.
So it slows it down.
So it slows it down a little bit. So nice. Not sure that's, anyway, it's just one of those little tricks.
That. I wonder if the
girls they did.
Can you imagine playing in Port Hedland and you walk out and you see Nick O'Hearn who's playing
it? That was a long time ago, don't worry. But there wasn't much going on. But this week we have another big week of golf. Got a signature event on the PGA Tour, the one at Hilton Head. Looking forward to that, RBC Heritage. And
what's that golf course like?
Incredible.
It looks incredible on the TV. Yeah. It's one of those ones where you go, God, I'd love to play that.
Yeah. If I could play that, if I played that golf course every week, I would have had a chance to go on close to number one in the world because Tiger was there, but I reckon I could have got to number two.
Well, you could have, like old mate was suggesting, you could have funded a few tournaments for us down here.
Yeah, that's true.
It would have been a problem.
On the LPGA Championship, LPGA, they have the Chevron Championship, which is a major. Nelly's going for 5 in a row.
Four and then win a major as your fifth. It'd
That's
be a
in,
mighty effort.
At the Woodlands in Texas. And then on the Asian Tour, there's the Saudi Open coming this week, presented by the PIF.
Good course, the Woodlands in Texas.
Yes, so I hear. Never played it.
Yeah, I played there's the Texas Open and then there's the Texas Open I played. And they played it once at the Woodlands 100 years ago. And I just remember it being a really fun golf course.
Beautiful.
It was a ripper.
All right, Dan, time for some feedback.
Well, before we get to the feedback, you mentioned earlier on, Mark, how many majors did Lee Trevino win?
Yes. My money's on 7.
I think there was 8.
You're both wrong. Want another go?
6. 9.
Nick, you win.
6, okay.
In the course of his career, Trevino won 75 professional tournaments. 75 is pretty impressive. Sure. And 6 major championships. The US Open twice, 68-71.
Yeah.
Back-to-back British Opens, 71-72.
Yeah.
And the PGA Championship in 74 and 84.
I think the reason he didn't win a Masters was because early on he said, no, can't win on this golf course. And I have a feeling he didn't play many Masters because of that reason, I think.
Probably right.
I'll have to look at that.
Probably right. Well, he was always welcome, as long as his exemption was there. But, yeah, I think he had a bit of an issue with them there for a little bit.
Maybe.
For a little bit. I know he had an issue with Royal Melbourne.
Really?
Well, he played one year and the greens were so hard and so fast, he swore he'd never come back.
Wow.
Some courses just don't suit you.
Yeah.
Pete Brown's written in. A slap for Marco for not believing in Scotty. Good pick with Aubert, though. That kid is going to be a star.
That evens it out.
Excuse me, can the people remember the segment? It was the notable that couldn't possibly win.
Tell you what, though.
There's only a handful of notables.
I think Pete's right here. Pete said Aubert is going to be a star. He is already.
He is a star, right?
He's
world number nine. How much will that get? He was world number nine coming into the week.
Spots.
He might get to number four or five. Five or six.
Oh, look, he got about 1.6 mil for that second place. US,
yeah.
Well, he could fund the Australian Open.
Pretty good. Mark Ander has written in about Jason Day's outfit. I think he is straight off to a rave after the tournament.
He might have some glow sticks. I wonder if they make glow sticks, that mob.
Who knows? And this is a little harsh. Flemish Kiwi's written in. This could be. He wrote in mid-tournament. So this is a couple of days ago, I think it was on Friday night our time.
Yeah.
This could be my worst nightmare. The Shambo. In a green jacket.
Yeah, a lot of people have that feeling about him. I would have been interested to watch him play down the stretch, see how he does it. But I'm with you. Science won't win much at Augusta.
He's an unusual character as well.
You need to be an artist. Yeah. I'm with you.
Did you see the Hatton spitting in the earlier in the tournament, by the way?
In the general direction of what?
Well,
on the 12, hole? When he knocked it in the water?
I didn't see where it was in the direction of, to be honest. But it was from spitting on the green.
Was it? Okay. I thought he knocked it in the water on 12 one day or missed the green and he decided.
Well, maybe that's what it was.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
They'll note those things down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They'll note what Zach Johnson did. They'll note what Tyrrell's done. They'll note these things.
Yep.
They'll get their payback one way or another.
Feedback from Peter Wynn, who is a member of the Pimble Golf Club in Sydney.
Never played Pimble. Have you played Pimble?
No, never have.
I've heard good things about it, though.
Yeah, beautiful part of Sydney. Very much enjoying the podcast, guys. I listen every week. Some great tips in the masterclasses, particularly for putting. I am looking forward to your long-awaited interview with AJ Sutherland. He must be a hard man to pin down.
No, we're going to get him.
Hopefully, he can explain the difference in approach between the successful South African Sunshine Tour, which runs all year, compared to the compacted Australian Tour with a haphazard schedule.
Yes, look, I've said this a few times. I think the Australian golf's taken a couple of wrong turns, and not James's fault, not even close. But I think we should have hooked up with the European Tour a long time ago, just like the Sunshine Tour did that he's talking about then. One Asia was a complete disaster trying to compete in Asia and make up a tour. Didn't work, and they threw that one out as well. So the next thing we do has to be, it's got to be right.
Mm.
The next thing we do has to be 100% correct.
Does the Sunshine Tour run all year round?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There's certainly a Sunshine Tour kind of swing. And, you know, they have tournaments in South Africa that count on the DP World Tour and tournaments in other places that also count in the same week. So it's very doable.
Yep.
You had a masterclass a couple of weeks ago, Nick, on using your weight to lean into your shot.
Okay.
Doug Snow's written in, I've got severe hip arthritis, and I started to do this a little while ago, a la Gary Player. Much better results, straighter shots. This really works for me.
Solved his arthritis as well, hopefully.
Well, that would be helpful.
Really? No, that's great.
Awesome to
hear. That's great. I reckon, you know, if you do swing a golf club and you're not moving your hips, I think that can wear your hips. That can really hurt your hips even more. So actually, just having something in your head, Gary Player follow-throughs in that situation might fix both.
Maybe.
KR wrote in, with some of the recent talk on caddies, I wanted to recall an incident that occurred to me when I was caddying on tour. My player was playing with Terry Gale in the 89 Australian Open at Kingston Heath. We came to the 16th hole, which requires a short walk down the tee or down to the tee from the 15th green. Terry's caddies thought he would leave the back on the side of the fairway adjacent to the 15th green. However, unfortunately, Terry hit a low snap hook, that hit the bag
yep.
and triggered a two-shot penalty.
That caddy was forever known as Two Shots.
Two Shots.
That's exactly what KR's gone on to say. He was infamously named Two Shots arising from that incident. Luckily, Terry still made the cut, but he was not impressed.
Mm.
There was another caddy called 10 Yards, and that was actually Tony Carolyn's wife, Maria, because she was 10 yards behind him the whole way, couldn't keep up. No. No, I love the Carolyns. They're a great couple.
My favorite caddy nickname, there was a caddy in Europe, and unfortunately he had a big lump on his head.
Oh, yeah.
Have I told you this story? He had a huge lump. Have you heard this story, Nick?
No, I don't think so.
He had a big lump on his head. He's a caddy for Gordon Brand Jr.
Okay.
Gordon Brand Jr., had a fabulous year, 1 year, and Lumpy had a lot of money. And over the winter break, he actually went to the doctors and had the lump removed. Plastic surgery, had it removed. Anyway, Lumpy's turned up to the first tournament of the season, and he's wearing a hat, and he walked into the caddy shack, and he goes, "Hey, everybody!" And he took the hat off. He goes, "You can't call me Lumpy anymore." And one of the guys said, "Look who it is, lads. It's Lumpless." So he went from Lumpy to Lumpless.
I love it.
For the rest of the season.
That is a great story.
Good on him. Now, he lives in Australia these days. So, Lumpy, if you're listening, love you, mate.
We'd love to get him on. That'd be funny.
I'd love him to tell the story.
There's so many. I mean, the caddy nicknames. There are too many good ones.
They're the best. Mm.
Now, yesterday, the Golf Clearance Outlet drew their winner. So some very lucky bloke or lady is going to be playing in the LIV Golf Prime in Adelaide. We don't know who it is. Not yet anyway. However, what we did do a couple of weeks ago, you guys said, why don't we do a poll and see who you'd like to play with?
Yes.
And the names that you guys tossed in there were Cam Smith, John Rahm, DJ, and Mickelson.
Okay.
We've got the results.
I reckon DJ. Actually,
we should have put Hatton in there.
We can only go four at a time, though, right?
Yeah, we can only go four at a time.
So I reckon DJ.
What do you reckon?
No, it's got to be Cam.
Right.
5% wanted to play with DJ.
Oh, how far off am I?
Yeah, a long way.
Hopeless.
I wouldn't want to play with him either. I have played with him.
What was he like?
Yeah.
Really?
As in, you get nothing out of him. So he's not going to chat.
26% of Talk Birdies and me listeners, if they were playing in the LIV Golf Adelaide Pro-Am, would like to play with Phil Mickelson.
Wow. I would never have guessed that.
Yeah, I could see that.
29% would choose John Rahm.
Okay. Yeah.
And 39% would choose Cam Smith.
There you go.
Oh, good.
Yep.
They've gone for the Aussie.
For sure.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. That's the feedback, boys.
Poor old DJ.
And we'd love to get more feedback, too. If you've got anything you want to say or ask, talkbirdiesme.com.au or send an email, leave it on socials.
And how do they do the voicemail? I love voicemails. How do they do it again?
We go to the website and maybe just scroll down a little bit, and there's a little button that says record your message. You do it on your phone. It takes like 2 seconds.
Fantastic. We love the voicemails. Keep them coming in. It's time for this week's Masterclass.
Okay, time for the Masterclass with Nick this week for Watch My Numbers, the new app that have come on board this week. It's a fantastic app. Check it out. What they'll do is they'll turn your bogeys into birdies by analysing and improving your game. How good is that?
Too simple.
Mm. Yeah. All right, Nick, take it away.
It's very pertinent, actually, that we've got Watch My Numbers on now, because this Masterclass is going to be based around a little bit of data.
Oh, nice. Okay. That's good.
All right.
Now, I didn't actually plan this, but it's worked out perfectly. And it's all to do with Scottie Scheffler and the way he managed his way around the golf course on Sunday. He didn't have his A game. A lot of the commentators were talking about that after the fact in the
post-game
shows.
Paul McGinley was big on that, wasn't he?
A-minus, B-plus is what they were saying. And even Scheffler admittedly said, some of the irons I wasn't quite sure, but he managed his way around beautifully. And I'll shamelessly plug my own book here. It's called How to Play Your Best Golf, where there's a part of the book there where I talk about don't aim at pins. Okay, if you ask a professional golfer who's playing 18 holes of golf, how many pins did they aim at?
Three.
And for most golf courses, three will be your answer.
Yeah.
Augusta National, probably zero.
Yes.
Probably zero in that final round. Now, I won't go through his entire round. I want to go through his back nine. I cannot say back nine. At the Masters, you have to say the second nine.
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot about that.
That's right.
Got to be careful there.
I think there's a connotation,
yes,
don't they?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
You're not allowed to say back nine.
What do you mean? What's the connotation?
Well,
jeez.
Oh, really?
Have you been living under a rock for the last 20 years?
Okay. All right.
Anyway, to start the second nine at Augusta, the final nine on a Sunday.
That's better.
There we go. On 10. His second shot, perfect. Middle of the green, worked a little draw in.
Yep.
On 11, you cannot go left. We saw Oberg and Morikawa hit it in the water. Obviously, the misses to the right if you're going to miss the green. He missed it right. He made a bogey, but that's fine. Took the big number out of play. 12, middle of the green, all day long, perfect. 13, that second shot, perfect.
Yep.
Left side of the green. He hit it in Ray's Creek twice before, learnt the lesson, obviously. Tough shot still. 14, this is when you cashed out of your bet.
Yes.
When the ball was in the air. That middle pin, there's a little funnel to the left, as we saw on the coverage, how that ball just funnels down in perfectly. 15 even, he flared it to the right bunker, but you cannot go left on that second shot as a right-hander.
Was that plugged? That second shot
wasn't.
15?
It was fine.
Because I was taking my daughter to the school at that stage and had the radio on listening, but they thought it was plugged.
No, from the first camera angle it looked, and then they got from behind, and it was actually no problem. It was a pretty tough bunker shot, but that is the place if you're going to miss that green. 16, he used the slope beautifully. I think he actually pulled that one. It was a little further left than what he was hoping for, but he was aiming to the right. 17, left of the pin, and then 18, he found the fairway bunker, front right, perfect spot. So the whole genesis of that is manage your game around the golf course, and next round you play, listener, when you get out there, imagine there are no pins on the greens, and just think center of the green all day long. Kathy Whitworth, who was an LPGA player many, many years ago, won the most amount of golf tournaments in the history of the game, 88 LPGA tournaments, man or woman. Her theory, playing golf, middle of the green every single time. A little while ago, you'll like this, Mark, our little buddy, Lee Trevino, Ray Mack.
Yep, I love him.
From Kingston Heath.
Yep, best-dressed golfer at Kingston Heath.
Yeah, probably about 6 months ago or a little longer ago, I said, Ray, you know, we were talking about, you know, how he was playing, and he said to me, how many pins do you aim at? And I said, oh, probably two or three per round. He goes, what? Mm. I said, Ray, next round of golf, aim at the middle of every green. And you know what he did? He had 40 points.
There you go.
And then he was playing off a 9, and then 6, 9 months later, he's off a 3.
There you go.
So it kind of explains that course management, aiming away from flags, even though it's teasing you, aiming away from flags is the best thing. So if the pin's on the left, aim a little right, and if you miss right, you've got all this green to work with. And if you happen to pull it, well, hey, you might be next to the flag. Now, at the same time, you need to work on your short game, because if you do miss the green, you get more of a chance to get it up and down. But course management is so important. I'll post a little bit of a social as to what I'm talking about. I might even find a little green and a pin out here, Mark, as we can explain to our listeners about that as well.
I know Steve Elkington, when he won the PGA, when he beat Colin Montgomery in a playoff, he aimed at the centre of the green all week. All week.
Yep.
When I caddied for David Faraday, we played with Greg Norman the first two rounds. Steve Williams was just telling him where to play. I promise at Huntingdale, Greg never aimed at a flag, it felt like, you know, just listening in. And I've told the story about Dallas Athletic Club, haven't I? I'll quickly do it again. Where Dallas Athletic Club was the Royal Melbourne of Dallas. The Phi Kappa Deltas had the little dare to get into the Phi Kappa Deltas. They had to go and steal every flag. So they stole every flag on Friday night. Saturday, the members' comp was there. What do you reckon happened on Saturday? A record number of members broke their handicap on the Saturday because they were forced to shoot to the middle of the green. The story was in the paper of the Dallas Morning News. It's always my favourite. Nick Faldo was a centre of the green man. Ben Hogan is a centre of the green man. If you've been any good, you're a centre of the green person to a certain extent. Yeah. And it's a great masterclass and one that we need to remind people all the time. Yeah.
Well, if you watch that, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will look at that final round, but watch where he leaves his approaches into every green. There was only once he was out of position, and that was on 4, where he went long, and that was a gust of wind.
Yep.
He got a bit out of position on 2, where he went long as well, but that front bunker was so difficult. Cameron Smith actually held his bunker shot, but that was moving. It was very hard to get that up and down. So this masterclass, course management and how you manage your game around the golf course.
Now, it was the final year of a legend at Augusta, and I'm not talking about a player. I'm talking about one of the most famous voices. He's a legendary voice in American sports, and particularly at Augusta. His name is Vern Lundquist. What a voice, and some of the, you know, maybe, you know, it just almost, I would say 50% of the legendary calls was Vern.
Yeah. Yeah, and the two most iconic calls at that golf course were from Vern. One at 16 with Tiger Woods.
Yep.
You remember that one?
Yes.
Where he goes, oh my goodness, oh wow, in your life have you seen anything like that?
Yeah.
And then Jack's obviously.
Maybe. Just, yes, sir!
He was awesome. But the way he finished was all class. Just he was very understated on that 16 when Scheffler went through, and his last words were, "And now over to 17T," which was just beautiful. Yeah. Like he didn't big note anything. And the best thing was, I thought straight after is Ian Baker Finch, who was on 17, and Finchie, all he said was, "Thank you, Vern, for everything." And that little pause for everything, and it was just absolutely perfect calling.
Completely nailed it. Why don't we have a listen to some of the best of Vern Lundquist?
Masters means just about everything professionally.
My gracious, what a day.
Nothing to it.
And we have a new leader at the Masters.
This Masters will mark Vern's 40th and final call behind the CBS microphone.
40 years from 1983 on. 25 years of sitting up in that tower on 16, watching the world go by.
There you have it. He's tied for the lead at Augusta with two holes to play.
I am compelled to say, oh my goodness.
On a personal level, Augusta is a very special place. Nancy, my wife, and I celebrated our first wedding anniversary here. She's sitting right over here to my left, smiling as always. So many memorable occasions here. Most noticeably, this guy named Tiger in 2005. He is to be reactive. You can't anticipate. You've got to react as the fan would react. That's the genesis of what I said at Tiger's Chip Shop.
In your life, have you seen anything like that?
I think people at home are saying, I've never seen that in my life. But I'd never seen it.
I've heard that call a couple times. That's what I grew up watching, listening to Vern. He has just an amazing ability to narrate in a way that is poetic. He just draws the audience in.
He's accomplished a lot here, and he's had a pretty good impact on my professional career.
I've been lucky enough to have that memory with Vern for the rest of my life.
You're right, Vern. We have not seen anything like that.
I'm Vern Lundquist at the par 4 17th, the seemingly innocent 400-yard straight-ahead par 4.
I worked a 17 and 86.
This is for sole possession of the lead.
I said to myself, keep it simple and get out of the way.
Maybe. Yes, sir!
I really am hoping to see Jack and just say thank you very much.
Yes, sir! That is so good.
Vern's a good guy. He's been at the Masters a long time. The iconic yes, sir, with me in 86 was one that obviously I'll never forget.
Jack in 86 and Tiger in 05. There are worse things for your career than to be associated with those two. I've worked every hole in the second nine now except 10 and 18. In 83, I worked the 13th hole. Seve won it.
Looks like it might be a 6-iron. Seve Ballesteros, leader by 4. He flirted with danger, but came out fortunate.
At one point, I did 15 and 16.
Wonderful touch.
In 96.
Oh, goodness!
This guy named Greg Norman had a 6-shot lead disappear.
No. A 6-shot lead with which he began this day, an ever-increasingly distant memory.
I've done 11 and 12.
I'll be at the beautiful but treacherous little par 312. On which we find 32-year-old Fred Couples.
The famous Freddie Couples tee shot that hung up on the bank.
Wow.
With a miracle of sorts.
Well, think of the odds of that ball staying dry.
How many times have you seen that stay dry from there?
Never.
I guarantee you no ball stays on that bank anymore.
Any good? How about the reaction? Found another ball.
This is such a special place, and I've had so many great moments here. I love everything about this event. It's my favorite golf course ever, and again, just a lot of memories.
And that's for you, Vern.
What a man, what a career.
How good was that?
Oh, Vern, the voice.
So good. Hey, I forgot to mention this story. When I was taking people to Augusta, I did it for about 12 years. There was one year where we only had about 20 people. And it was an old group of gentlemen, just beautiful old lovely, lovely people, you know, you just gorgeous old men. And then we had 10 lunatics, right? 10 complete psychos. 10 where, you know, I'd have to headlock them out of a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning and just say, get into the truck, you know.
So that's a tough call out Augusta because they have rules.
Yeah, that's right. So we thought the lunatics would be the issue.
Yeah.
But the morning we're running in, the last day, it's Sunday, and one of the most, you know, the most beautiful old man in the beautiful old man group, he was desperate to get his chair next to the 18th green. So he ran through.
Oh, no.
Anyway, they started yelling, hey, no running, no running, no running. All right? So he stopped running, but he was walking fast. And then you hear, no fast walking, sir. No fast walking.
Jeez.
Like that. Anyway, yeah. So they're miles in front of us. Anyway, so I'm kind of back with the lunatics and everybody else who was just moseying along. And then 100 metres up, here he is, the old, beautiful old man, was in an Augusta sin bin.
A sin bin?
He was sin binned for walking fast.
Well, at least they didn't kick him out.
They didn't kick him out, but I promise you, he was there with another chap. Right? This chap, he was there. He was there. They had this little roped off area.
Oh.
And he was in the sin bin with this, oh, this dopey looking character. He had, you know, his Hawaiian shirt on, Hawaiian pants and thongs. I'll never forget it.
You could just imagine those two guys going, so what are you in for?
So we walk past him and going, Eric, what's the problem? What's happened? He goes, I've got another 9 minutes to go. He's in the sin bin for 10 minutes.
How old do you reckon he was?
75.
Oh, no.
75 years old, in the sin bin. One of the great memories I've got from Augusta.
Classic.
See you next week, boys.
Cheers.
See ya.
And thanks for listening to Talk Birdie to Me. We appreciate you listening and getting involved. And a huge thanks to our fantastic partners. Without them, the show just wouldn't be the same. Watch My Numbers. Download the app and turn your bogeys into birdies by analysing and improving your game like never before. The Golf Clearance Outlet. Awesome prices on great gear. You can see them in Melbourne, Sydney, Brizzy, Perth, and online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. And Ping. See your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting. They'll help you play your best. If Ping's good enough for Nick O'Hearn, well, that says it all. And we'd love you to get involved with the show. You can leave a voicemail with any comments or questions at talkbirdietome.com.au or send an email or comment on the socials. And if you can share the pod with a friend, well, we'd love that. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.